The setting for this poem is just round the corner from this studio here in Hatfield Road. It's St. Peter's Church. It describes a concert, and the cellist referred to was the international cellist Alexander Sandy Bailey. And the poem otherwise tells the whole story. A Different Light by John Mole. The church was full. Light fell through stained glass, wrapped the aisle in a cloak of many colours, laying out a patchwork on the tiles. Already there was music in the warp and weft of expectation, threaded string by string through what we'd come to hear, the long-awaited lunchtime concert by a local cellist back from an international career to play for us. He'd brought the family, his wife, twin daughters, drowsy bundles in a double pushchair, safely silent as the piece began. The warm legato pulse of Messiaen, his praise to the eternity of Jesus, lifted by a cello's resonance above the piano's chords. For little ones, a lullaby. For us, the adult wonder that we come to hear. So, concentration bowed our heads, until the closing sostenuto moved us towards silence on the held note of a prayer. Then suddenly, out of the mouths of babes, a loud cry joined it, one and then a second woken by the first, their counterpoint a fierce exchange, falsetto, agitated, not to be appeased. We looked up as the cellist's closed eyes opened, widened with an alarm that stretched beyond the music, anger even on its behalf and ours, but still he held the note and still the cries accompanied it, insistent, shrill, a caterwaul crescendo overwhelming everything. But then the father recognised its source, and love, embarrassment, ambiguous apology sealed up his eyes again in a transcendental smile. He knew, as we did, that this was inescapably the music of what happens, that what happens is part of the design. And so the performance closed with our applause and laughter, understanding and complicity. Then, as we left the church, united in a different light, we passed the mother and her twins, illuminated by it too, for that moment witnessing their own epiphany, how it would be recalled like this, how that mischievous divine intent had done its work, renewed the score for all of us, a mother and a father written into it, their children yet to learn the part they'd played, although already, like two grace notes, held together, falling back to sleep. Until quite recently, there was a butterfly world on the road out of St. Albans in the Watford direction, but sadly it is now closed. We took our children to it many years ago, and this poem is an account, really, of the experience of taking our children there. In the Butterfly House by John Mole. As I pass through, flutterings brush against me, settle a moment on my shoulder before I leave. A word in your ear, they seem to whisper, then make a wish that our beauty and weightlessness might be sufficient, that wings may unfold and close in safety far across the world before it becomes too late. On leaves and bark and exotic bloom, the iridescent miracles alight, then, seeming to think twice, take flight as if this crowded, temperate room were not the sanctuary, it appears, but a honey trap. Frail specks, they cluster against the glass and perspex, carrying with them all our fears on their behalf. Amazed, informed, I read and then forget the Latin names, but what they come to signify remains, in stark translation. You have been warned. This is a sonnet, and I'd like to dedicate it to all lovers of the movies of the 1940s, 50s and 60s, and perhaps to the girl referred to at the end of the poem. Dream Girl. I was the girl who wrote to Noel Coward, dated Errol Flynn and Edward Gee, stiffened her upper lip for Leslie Howard, brought Clark Gable down on bended knee, drove around the block with Fred McMurray, rode the Ferris wheel with Orson Welles, told the Hayes Committee not to worry, promised Walter Pigeon wedding bells, followed Bogey's hat down every mean street, shared Paul Henreid's last two cigarettes, tried in vain to fathom Sydney Green Street, settled George Raft's hash by placing bets. I was the girl who almost lost her head, but fell asleep and married you instead. This poem is about one of my great stand-up comedian heroes, Tommy Cooper, who, as you may know, died in full view of the audience on stage, who were laughing as he collapsed because they thought it was part of the action. When Tommy Cooper died on stage, all he'd ever had to do was to stand up there with that pillarbox grin, gauche heavyweight of legerdemain, his manic stare a bewildered glaze, his two left feet tripping the boards, so that when he died, it seemed the perfection of his act in exquisite slow motion, a long slide into himself. Such absolute control, the exact moment recognised for what it offered as the risk to take. A chance to bow out on the wave of the applause he heard from stalls and balcony. Ignore the shout of panic in the wings. His last breath taken just like that. It was a poet's death. Over the years, my wife and I collaborated on, she was an artist and illustrator, and we collaborated on many books for children. This poem is entitled First Day, and it's spoken by a child in school for the very, very first time. First Day. Here in this great hall which smells of polish, the windows are so tall and the floor so shiny that everything feels funny and not right at all. And I wish that my sister was here, that she was next to me, that she was saying, let's watch TV, but that would be home, and this is school, with everybody waiting until the music stops, and nobody talking, and me not knowing anybody, not anybody, and all of us in lines with teachers at the front and sides, not smiling, looking worried and a bit cross. Then one of them is really friendly, with a big voice saying, good morning, children. And everybody goes, good morning, Mrs. Someone. And she has things to tell us, like it's someone's birthday. And I'm feeling better now, much better. And I look at the top of the tallest window where the sun is shining. This poem was inspired, or possibly inspired, I can't remember now which, an illustration by my wife, the illustrator, of a running figure with a coat covered with the pattern of a jigsaw puzzle. And the poem which goes with the illustration is The Jigsaw Man. The Jigsaw Man. Do you really think you can keep up with the Jigsaw Man who sits and thinks and thinks and sits, surrounded by a sea of bits of every shape, of every size, then suddenly with blazing eyes puts this one here and that one there, yet still it seems finds time to spare to smile at you, to watch your face, as he snaps them into place. Ah, yes, indeed, it may have been your idea to challenge him, but he belongs to those who know exactly where the pieces go. A patch of land, a slice of sky, a tree, a river running by, The usual scene that you'd expect with everything present and correct. So why, you wonder, couldn't you do what the jigsaw man can do and fit it all inside its frame instead of merely feeling shame when after thinking hard and long you try a piece and find it's wrong, putting land where sky should be? Oh, better leave it all to me, he says. And then the puzzle's done. The jigsaw man has upped and gone, knowing that now you'll never know exactly where the pieces go, and leaving you the dullest bit, the trouble of undoing it.
My wife and I once had a foxhound cross called Dexter as a pet. His sense of smell was amazing. Foxhound by Brian Young. In a sham of sleep and heavy with dreams, nest curled deep in cushions, he twitches and squeaks, splashing through a spray of pigeons in the farmyard of his mind. Half-open eye and quivering nose tell him that a 2-year vixen is circling the night-shut house, her faint spoor creeping cat-like down the chimney. Then the howl, cold as a hunter's moon, and the wide-awake staccato bark, sharp as an elbow, out, 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 leaping at the door. Off into the cave-dark, ghost-ride garden, snuffling a maze of trails in headlong rush, through broken fences and hawthorn hedges, pounding after long-gone foxes invading his fiefdom. He knows this land by its scents and flavours, often leads us along secret paths, insisted on for reasons never divulged, but essential for the protection of the realm. With nothing caught nor run to earth, he hobbles home, trembling, mud-flecked, yet triumphant in his duty. Corkscrew shakes, then carefully folds and kneads a new dream into his cushion. Blind from birth. Here I try to describe the great difficulties suffered by people born blind when given the gift of sight. Blind from birth. When the bandages came off, light did not surprise me, but colours moved, merged, mesmerised. A voice said, "Well?" So I knew there was a face, and whose. Following and focusing were many months' work, still unaccomplished. Today I shaved my nose, until my reflected hand revealed the vastness of my face, and the suds were white, not brown. I tried not to close my eyes. Things change as I walk round them. Is this an apple? A pear? Touch and smell will tell me. I must not close my eyes. On the windows are fields and trees. Twigs I know, buds I know, but I cannot feel a tree. Walking between them, I try not to trip over their shadows as they sidle past. At night, the moon is a broken fingernail tangled in the tops, as I am tangled in this world of sight. Let me go where I do not feel crippled, back to my safe, familiar, dark world of touch. They say you should never go back to childhood places. My father was a grocer, and I once went back to his shop. Pop-in cafe. Alloy and glass. Over the door, pop-in cafe. I could go in, but I squinny through at functional furniture and a pot plant waiting for custom. This was my father's shop. Marbled tiles round brass-handled door, proud pyramids of tins, patchwork of smells, coffee, biscuits, curry powder, cheese. On the shelf edges, Maserati tea, over and over. Polished wooden counters, bacon slicer, coffee grinder with burnished hopper, and on the right, the door to our flat. A snug of a shop, warm as a crowded bus, rattling with chatter. Come and look round the back. This was our little square of tired grass, and the outhouse with hams boiling, and our van smelling of petrol and soap flakes. My father dug a hole for an Anderson, but it filled with water. I'll concrete the damn thing over. Well, someone did. A doorless, windowless extension squats over our backyard. The juice and joy of this place are sealed forever in this package. Anything else for you? Unconditional love was here, certainly, but memories change in the remembering. The present has a right to be as it is. It will be someone's past. So I'll not pop in, but sneak a photo, in case I resolve never to come back. Here's a poem for the children. The Ballad of Billy Crikey. My dad's forgot how to gargle. Stone the crows, said a man with huge toes. Crikey, said Billy Crikey. I've just seen a hen loop the loop. Crumbs, said a boy with 10 thumbs. Crikey, said Billy Crikey. My legs have walked off without me. Goodness me, said a passing tree. Crikey, said Billy Crikey. My tortoise has just grown wings. Knock me down with a feather, said 3 parrots together. Crikey, said Billy Crikey. A flea has fallen in love with me. Oh, good grief, said my dog through his teeth. Crikey, said Billy Crikey. A snake has swallowed my bed. My giddy aunt said. Crikey, said Billy Crikey. My mum can walk on the ceiling. You're a whopping liar, sang the heavenly choir. Crikey, said Billy Crikey. This poem tells of an incident that happened to me in India, in a taxi, going from the airport to the hotel. Crossroads. We're flung forward by the brake. Another feral dog, heat-drowsed, slow, missed by a whisker. No, snake, 6-foot snake. Out of deference, we let her pass. Powered by lightning, sidewinding over shimmering tarmac, gliding like mercury over glass. Earth mother like Shakti, the consort of Shiva, on her headlong errand she ignores us totally. Out of reverence we leave her to reach her distant, ever-secret lair. Our universe halts right there. All movement, all progress paused. We do not even think we spared your life. Her fissured features, if aware of such hubris, would spit back, I gave you yours. 4 seconds, then men and women bearing burdens, among grinding trucks and cycles glittering in the heat, trudge again along the dust-blown street, past walls enclosing watered hotel gardens. We weave between them to the Holiday Inn, where a motionless lizard, tail curled, head tilted, curious, uncertain, forms an intricate impression of another world. This poem simply says that poems don't come easily. Waiting. All our poets are busy at this time. A poem will be written for you as soon as possible. Thank you for your patience. All our poets are busy at this time. An inspired poem will be with you shortly. Thank you for your patience. All our poets... We are sorry to advise you that our muse has fused. Please call later. Thank you for your patience.